You're listening to event audio from the Brookings Events Podcast, part of the Brookings Podcast Network. For more in-depth analysis and commentary from Brookings scholars and our guests, go to brookings.edu/podcasts or listen via Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, or your favorite podcast app. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Policy Podcasts.
My name is John Allen. I'm the president of the institution, and it is my great pleasure to welcome to this virtual stage our honored guest, the Federal Reserve Chair, Jay Powell. At this moment of unprecedented challenge, not only to our public health system and to our health in general, there's also an enormous challenge to our economy. And Chair Powell and his colleagues moved forcefully and quickly in responding to this crisis. They found creative solutions, keeping credit flowing to households and businesses, and to prepare the economy so that it can recover when this virus recedes. And it surely will, ladies and gentlemen. Your work, sir, and that of your colleagues is far from over, but we are in good hands under your leadership. Indeed, leaders are tested in times of crisis, and this crisis tests our leadership in no uncertain terms. And sir, you have risen to this occasion. I believe it's safe to say that we and all Americans have appreciated your calm, your decisive leadership in this moment of peril. And on behalf of all of us at Brookings, please let me commend you on the powerful example of American leadership that you have set for us all, and you continue to display every single day as you perform your duties. You are an inspiration and an example to all of us. As for today, sir, we'll shortly give you the opportunity for your remarks, and I'll then turn the stage over to my good friend David Wessel, who's the director of our Hutchins Center on Fiscal and Monetary Policy. He'll then pose some questions directly to you for what I know will be a robust conversation. Again, to everyone on the channel today, thank you very much for joining us. And for Chair Powell, thank you, sir. We're honored by your presence. David?
Welcome, Chair Powell. The floor is yours.
Thanks very much, John, for your kind words. I do have a brief statement, and then I'll look forward to David's questions. The challenge we face today is different in scope and character from those we've faced before. The coronavirus has spread quickly around the world, leaving a tragic and growing toll of illness and lost lives. This is first and foremost a public health crisis, and the most important response is coming from those on the front lines in hospitals, emergency services, and care facilities. We watch in collective awe and gratitude as these dedicated individuals put themselves at risk in service to others and to our nation. Like other countries, we are taking forceful measures to control the spread of the virus. Businesses have shuttered, workers are staying home, and we have suspended many basic social interactions. People have been asked to put their lives and their livelihoods on hold at significant economic and personal cost. We are moving with alarming speed from 50-year lows in unemployment to what will likely be very high, although temporary, levels. All of us are affected, but the burdens are falling most heavily on those least able to carry them. It is worth remembering that the measures we're taking to contain the virus represent an essential investment in our individual and collective health. As a society, we should do everything we can to provide relief to those who are suffering for the public good. The recently passed CARES Act is an important step in honoring that commitment, providing $2.2 trillion in relief to those who've lost their jobs, to low and middle income households, to employers of all sizes, to hospitals and healthcare providers, and to state and local governments. And there are reports of additional legislation in the works. The critical task of delivering financial support directly to those most affected falls to our elected officials, who use their powers of taxation and spending to make decisions about where we as a society should direct our collective resources. The Fed can also contribute in important ways by providing a measure of relief and stability during this period of constrained economic activity and by using our tools to ensure that the eventual recovery is as vigorous as possible. To those ends, we have lowered interest rates to near zero in order to bring down borrowing costs, and we've also committed to keeping rates at this low level until we are confident that the economy has weathered the storm and is on track to achieve our maximum employment and price stability goals. Even more importantly, we have acted to safeguard financial markets in order to provide stability to the financial system and to support the flow of credit in the economy. As a result of the economic dislocations caused by the virus, some essential financial markets had begun to sink into dysfunction, and many channels that households, businesses, and state and local governments rely on for credit had simply stopped working. We acted forcefully to get our markets working again, and as a result, market conditions have generally improved. Many of the programs that we're undertaking to support the flow of credit rely on emergency lending powers that are available only in very unusual circumstances, such as those we find ourselves in today, and only with the consent of the Secretary of the Treasury. We are deploying these lending powers to an unprecedented extent, enabled in large part by the financial backing from the Congress and the Treasury. We will continue to use these powers forcefully, proactively, and aggressively until we're confident that we are solidly on the road to recovery. I would stress that these are lending powers, not spending powers. The Fed is not authorized to grant money to particular beneficiaries. The Fed can only make secured loans to solvent entities with the expectation that the loans will be fully repaid. In the situation we face today, many borrowers will benefit from these programs, as will the overall economy. But there will also be entities of various kinds that need direct fiscal support rather than a loan they would struggle to repay. Our emergency measures are reserved for truly rare circumstances, such as those we face today. When the economy is well on its way back to recovery, and private markets and institutions are once again able to perform their vital functions of channeling credit and supporting economic growth, we will put these emergency tools away. None of us has the luxury of choosing our challenges. Fate and history provide them for us. Our job is to meet the tests we are presented. At the Fed, we're doing all we can to help shepherd the economy through this difficult time. When the spread of the virus is under control, businesses will reopen and people will come back to work. There is every reason to believe that the economic rebound, when it comes, can be robust. We entered this turbulent period on a strong economic footing, and that should help support the recovery. In the meantime, we are using our tools to help build a bridge from the solid economic foundation on which we entered this crisis to a position of regained economic strength on the other side. I want to close by thanking the millions on the front lines, those working in healthcare, sanitation, transportation, grocery stores, warehouses, deliveries, security, including our own team at the Federal Reserve, and countless others. Day after day, you've put yourself in harm's way for others, to care for us, to ensure that we have access to the things that we need, and to help us through this difficult time. Thank you. And David, I'll look forward to your questions.
Hi, can you hear me now?
Yes.
I'm David Wessel, Director of the Hutchins Center at Brookings. I appreciate your remarks, and I particularly want to reinforce the point you made at the end that a lot of us have the luxury of working from home remotely, but there are a lot of people who don't, and they have often been forgotten in the past, and I think we all celebrate the work they're doing and the risk they're taking. Chair Powell, and I have a number of questions of my own and some that we've gotten from people who sent them in by email or via Twitter. In the past 3 weeks, more than 15 million people have filed initial claims for unemployment benefits. That's huge. We all know that the second quarter is going to be awful, but I wonder if you could help us look ahead. You and your formidable platoon of economists, what do they see for the rest of this year? You talked about a robust recovery. Do you expect that to begin this summer or fall, or do we have to wait longer for that?
We have terrific economists with different specializations right across the Fed, and it's really a great honor to work with them. And if you ask them today what their expectation is for the economy over the course of the rest of this year, they will tell you that it really depends on the path of the coronavirus. How quickly will it spread? How quickly do we get it under control? How quickly are we able to reopen the economy with confidence? People can go back to work knowing that it's safe. Businesses can reopen knowing that it's safe. So that's really the thing. These are not typical economic questions that our great economists are practiced and skilled at answering. So they'll tell you that. And so I would say, generally, my expectation is that the second quarter will be a very weak one. And that's because businesses are shut down. Workers are either working from home, or they're furloughed or laid off, or they're just, you know, the businesses that they work at is closed for the time being. So we do expect to see a very low economic output and big increases in initial claims for unemployment and in unemployment during the second quarter. When the virus does run its course and it's safe to go back to work and safe for businesses to open, then we would expect there to be a fairly quick rebound as people do go back to work and start resuming normal levels of economic activity. I think most people expect that to happen in the second half of this year, after the second quarter, which of course ends on June 30. To try to be precise about where that would be, I don't think that would be appropriate. I will just say that it does depend on people staying home, staying healthy, doing everything we can to get the virus under control. The more we do that, the sooner it will be safer to go back to work.
Thank you. So as you noted, the Fed has cut interest rates to zero. You've bought hundreds of billions worth of treasury bonds and mortgages. You've launched an alphabet soup of lending programs, including some new ones today for state and local governments and mid-sized businesses that you say could lend up to $2.3 trillion. Is there any limit to how much money the Fed can create, how much it can lend, without having some unwelcome side effects like inflation or asset price bubbles?
So I'll just say that these programs that we're using, under the law, we do these with the consent, as I mentioned in my remarks, with the consent of the Treasury Secretary and with fiscal backing from the Congress through Treasury. And we're doing it to provide credit to households, businesses, state and local governments, as we are directed by the Congress. And we're using that fiscal backstop to absorb any losses that we have. And what we've been doing is looking for places that are very important to the real economy, things that really affect people's lives and economic output, and where credit to those parts of the economy has broken down. Those are the ones I've mentioned. And so that's essentially what we're doing. And we can keep doing that as long as those needs arise. Our ability to do that is limited really by the law. We have to find unusual and exigent circumstances. The Treasury Secretary has to agree. And we are using this fiscal backstop. But there's no limit on how much of that we can do, other than that it must meet the tests under the law as amended by Dodd-Frank.
But isn't there a risk that with all this money coming out of Congress, the money that we're lending, that we'll end up with something that we don't like, as in more inflation than we'd like, or asset price bubbles?
You know, so inflation has been an interesting phenomenon. Back when 12 years ago, when the financial crisis was getting going and the Fed was doing quantitative easing, many people feared that the increases in the money supply that were as a result of quantitative easing, asset purchases, would result in high inflation. Not only did it not happen, the challenge has become that inflation has been below our target. So that is the challenge has been inflation below target. And honestly, it is not a first order concern for us today that too high inflation might be coming our way in the near term. Far from it. There are certainly, I would say, these are programs that we're developing at a high rate of speed. We don't have the luxury of taking our time the way we usually do. We're trying to get help quickly to the economy as it's needed. And I worry that, you know, in hindsight, you will see that we could have done things differently. But one thing I don't worry about is inflation right now.
A number of people wrote questions that go something like this. Think of somebody who works at a small restaurant. She's lost her job. The restaurant's closed for how long, really nobody knows. All the things that you're doing, how do they help people like her, the owners of that small restaurant, and the millions of people like her in that position?
So she sounds very typical of what many people are unfortunately enduring at the moment. I would say the most important thing that she can do is to stay home and stay healthy. The more people do that, the sooner we will get control of the spread of the virus, the sooner we'll be able to go back to work. It's also important, by the way, that our healthcare authorities develop a plan for that to happen in a careful way that doesn't result in another outbreak, and then we have to go back to square one. In the near term, the biggest relief that she will get is probably going to be from the expanded unemployment insurance under the CARES Act, which I think added $600 per week for people's unemployment insurance. She'll probably find that it's hard to get access to that right away because there's so many newly unemployed people that there are backups at the unemployment offices. But that money, she's entitled to that money, and she will get that money. It may take a few weeks longer than it should. So what is the Fed's role in this? Our role, as I mentioned in my remarks, is really to try to provide some stability and some relief during this period when the economy is partly shut down. That involves keeping interest rates low. So if she has a mortgage or credit card debt, she'll feel lower interest payments from that. As you mentioned, David, we've used our tools to keep the financial markets functioning. That's going to avoid significant further damage to the economy. And really the most important thing we can do is, while providing stability during this period, will be to support a robust recovery when it does come. That's really what our tools are most important for.
You mentioned that Congress has done quite a bit. You mentioned correctly that you don't do taxes and spending, Congress does. But everyone, including members of Congress, look to you for advice. In your judgment, do we have to do a lot more on the fiscal policy front to respond to this crisis?
So I'll just stress that we're not responsible for fiscal policy. We don't give public advice to Congress on fiscal policy. I will say that, as I mentioned in my remarks, in many cases, what people really need is direct fiscal support. Rather than a loan, and what we can do is loan. So there's a big need for fiscal policy. I hear many voices on both sides of Capitol Hill and in both parties talking now about further support. I do think that's likely to be appropriate. They will have to decide as elected officials what that might be. But you already hear, further funding for the small business SBA loans. And also perhaps more direct funding for the states and for hospitals. Again, not our job, but I would see that as more likely than not to be needed.
And a good idea.
Yes, absolutely. I would say broadly, people are undertaking these sacrifices for the common good. We need to make them whole. To the extent we have the ability to make them whole, we should be doing that as a society. They didn't cause this. Their business isn't closed because of anything they did wrong. They didn't lose their job because of anything they did wrong. This is what the great fiscal power of the United States is for, is to protect these people as best we can from the hardships they're facing.
Congress has allocated in the CARES Act $450 billion to backstop Fed emergency lending. If I did my arithmetic right, today you used $195 billion of that for the various programs you announced this morning. What are your priorities for the rest of that money? How do you think about how you'll use it and whether you'll have to use it?
So our priority really for all of it is the same, and that is what's happened is in our big, complicated economy and financial markets and banking system, we rely on those who have funds to lend through various channels to those who are borrowing. And what happened when the spread of the coronavirus around the globe became clear is investors all over the world had really struggled to assess what that meant for the economy. And so they pulled back from other kinds of investment and really went to the safest short-term investments like T-bills. And the result of that was that many, many parts of the capital markets and lending more broadly stopped functioning. And that is exactly the situation that our emergency powers are meant to address. So we have moved in, and as I mentioned, our priority are those areas of the markets that are most fundamental to supporting the real economy. You see the programs. We've now announced, I think, 9 different facilities, and those really are the priority areas where we thought that help was needed. As we identify other areas, We won't hesitate to move into those areas. In addition, we may find that some of the programs we've announced need adjusting and need to be larger, or didn't need to be as large as we thought, or need to be changed. We're going to be watching all of that and very much willing to adapt.
There is, I think, a consensus that one mistake is made during the global financial crisis a decade ago was that banks were allowed to deplete their capital by paying dividends for too long. Now, several big banks have voluntarily suspended stock buybacks to preserve their capital. I'm curious why hasn't suggested or directed them to suspend their common dividends as well.
Yeah. Maybe I'll start by saying that businesses distribute earnings really to their shareholders through buybacks and through dividends. And that's just a way of saying that that the owners may have better use for those funds than the business does. It's a perfectly normal thing in our capitalist system. And our largest financial institutions do about 70% of those distributions through share repurchases. All of our 8 largest, most systemically important institutions have stopped distributions through that channel, as have a number of the regional banks that account for a big part of the banking system. And that's a good thing. They haven't stopped dividends. And in my way of thinking, I don't think that's something that needs to be done at this point. I think our banks are highly capitalized, far more highly capitalized, with more high quality capital than they were before the financial crisis. And, you know, we'll be watching to see how things evolve, but I don't think that step is appropriate at this time.
I see. One of the things that distinguishes this period, which is pretty extraordinary, is what's going on in the mortgage market. We've seen a sharp spike in delinquencies. It's hard to for people to buy. It's even hard for people to refinance mortgages. There's questions about the mortgage servicers. Do you think there are steps that need to be taken now by the government, broadly defined, to make sure that a mortgage crisis doesn't make the economic recovery slower than need be?
Well, so a couple of things. First, I think the CARES Act does provide a moratorium on payments for some time for some mortgage holders. But you're absolutely right. The mortgage market is at the very center of our economy and very important for the real economy. That's why we bought so many mortgage-backed securities at such a historically aggressive pace over the last few weeks. We feel like the mortgage, that market, which is where an awful lot of individual home and other mortgages wind up, is now functioning more properly. We're watching carefully the situation with the mortgage servicers. And I will just tell you that we certainly have our eyes on that as a key market that does support households and consumer spending, really, which is, of course, 70% of the economy. So we'll be watching that carefully.
Chair Powell, I understand that a few minutes ago, the Treasury Secretary, Steve Mnuchin, said he thought the U.S. economy might be ready to reopen by the end of May, as soon as the president feels comfortable with the public health stuff. Does that seem right to you?
You know, we don't, this is not a judgment that is assigned to the Fed to make. That's a judgment that has to be made, I think, starting with health officials. I do think it's time to have a serious public conversation and a lot of analysis about that. You know, we need to have a plan nationally for reopening the economy. We all want it to happen as quickly as possible. We all want to avoid a false start where we partially reopen and that results in a spike in coronavirus cases, and then we have to go back again to square one. We all want to avoid that. So we're not experts in that here at the Fed. I would really rely on the medical experts principally, and then that will be a decision for really other parts of government.
I'd like to think a little bit about like on the other side here. What are you going to be looking at to decide whether it's time for you to pull back these lending facilities and maybe begin to tighten again?
You know, as you've noticed over the years, David, we tend to move gradually and predictably. We think that's a good way to do things. So I think we'll be looking to see, we'll be looking to see that the economy is well on the path to recovery. We'll be in no hurry to pull back on our asset purchases or on these programs. They're tentatively scheduled to stop lending on September 30th. If they have to go longer than that, of course they will. So I think the thing we'll be looking for is to make sure that the economy really is on a solid footing before we start pulling back. And then, as you know, when we start pulling back, we do so very gradually. If you think about the way we ended our quantitative easing back in 2013-14. We did it over the course of a full year. You can fully appreciate and expect that we will follow that playbook of well-telegraphed and advanced, quite gradual moves, and we won't start them until it's time to do so, which would be a time at which we are confident that the economy is on a solid footing again.
A number of people have asked whether you think you'll rely on a cap on short-term interest rates, a yield curve control kind of thing, when we come out of this thing. Have you considered that?
So we, of course, we've done a lot of thinking about what monetary policy might look like over the coming months. For now, though, two things. First, we think our monetary policy is just in the right place. We've got rates at zero, and we've said that we'll hold them close to zero, that is, until we are sure that the economy has weathered the storm and is on the way to recovery. So that's, we think, exactly where that should be. The principal focus now is not on adjusting what we see as quite an appropriate stance of monetary policy, at least for the next few months. The principal focus is on these lending programs and making sure that that credit does flow in the economy. We saw what happens when the credit system breaks. It can really inflict much greater damage on the economy. We're doing everything we can to avoid that, and we'll continue to do that so that credit is flowing, households, businesses, state and local governments, as requested by Congress. And that's really the main focus now. All of those things that about monetary policy, of course, we're thinking carefully about what that might look like in the future, but they're not, you know, something we're currently, you know, thinking would be appropriate.
Are you at all worried about the Federal Reserve, which is, after all, unelected officials making decisions about who can borrow and who can and what credit rating is eligible for your loans and where you're not going to lend?
So this is an area where during the global financial crisis that ended in 2010, let's say, the Fed really made those decisions, although did so with some consultation with the Treasury Department. One of Dodd-Frank's innovations was to say that we could only use these extraordinary powers with the consent of the Treasury Secretary. And I think that's actually a wise decision. Decisions of this magnitude really should, there should be some accountability at least for those who are elected by the public. We are not elected by the public. And that is the administration in the form of the Treasury Secretary. I think that's actually a healthy thing, that there be some connection to elected officials. So I think that's a wise move on the part of Dodd-Frank. So the second thing I'll say is we don't make decisions about individual firms. We're only allowed under Dodd-Frank to have programs of broad eligibility, meaning classes of borrowers. Any borrower that meets the eligibility requirements for one of these facilities can take part in the facility. We're not going to be picking this firm, but not that firm. It's broad eligibility. So there won't be that. I'd also say that there are overlapping spheres here. The Fed has complete authority over monetary policy. Treasury does fiscal policy with Congress. But financial stability is really something where we both have a stake and both have authorities. The Treasury Secretary chairs the Financial Stability Oversight Council, for example. So we do work closely with them on these facilities, and I'll say that's been a very productive relationship.
And finally, I wonder if you could speculate a little bit about how the economy will be different when we come out of this. We'll have a lot more debt, that's for sure. Do you think that we'll be saving more? Do you think our way of life will change? Do you have thoughts on that?
You know, our main focus is on the near term, and that's really our intense focus. But these are great questions, and my guess is that behavior will change. It won't change quickly. You know, people will start to go back to movies, to theaters. They'll start to travel, and they'll gain confidence that it's okay to do so. And that process can be a fairly short one, but I think it'll be, at the beginning, it will certainly be gradual and tentative. Will there be longer run changes in our behavior? I don't know. That's a great question. We'll have to see.
And I think a lot of people are scared now. This is not something that any of us have lived through in our lifetimes, a pandemic like this that's caused the economy to stop and people will be afraid of interacting with their neighbors. I think people want to know that our leaders, people like you, are confident that we can get through this. So I want to give you this opportunity to, if you like, to reassure people about what lies ahead.
Thank you. So, David, I would say this is going to be and is a very difficult time for many, many people. People are getting sick. Their loved ones are getting sick. People are getting furloughed and laid off. People who started great businesses are seeing them shuttered. I wouldn't want to say anything that diminishes the suffering that that people are feeling at all. It's going to be a tough time. But if the government continues to give people the support that they need, that includes us, that includes Congress, other parts of government, and if people stay home and stay healthy until it's appropriate to go back to work, and if the healthcare policy experts devise a plan for a good way to go back to work and reopen the economy, if we do all of those things, there's every reason to think that we can be back on the road to a recovery fairly quickly, and that that can be a robust recovery. I actually thought Chairman Bernanke said it well the other day when he said that if we do those things, you'll be looking back on this and you won't see much, only modest effects, I think he said, on the economy from this event. And I think that that can be the case if we do the things that I mentioned.
Well, as they say, from your lips to God's ears. Chairman Jay Powell, thank you very much for your time today. I thank everybody for watching and the very good questions we received. And we wish you all a very safe next few weeks as you continue the important job of steering our economy through this terrible storm. Thank you very much.
Thank you, David, and thanks, John.